Welcome to Signals, the podcast where we step back from the hype to look at what's really shaping technology and the industries around it. In each episode, we talk with industry experts to surface real trends, question our assumptions, and unpack why things work the way they do. Today, we're not just focused on what's new, but on the decisions, developments, and debates that got us here, and what they might mean in the long run. I'm your host, Michael Dowden, and here with me today is John Davies, the CTO of Incept 5 and FinTechs. John, thanks for being with me today.
Yep, you're most welcome. It's good to be here.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about what you're working on with AI today.
Wow. it is currently mind-blowing at the moment. I'm struggling with sleep, and my colleagues are sort of going, why do you keep buzzing us with all this stuff? And it's everyone saying, how on earth do you keep up with it? It is utterly crazy, and it's just getting more and more crazy. We're super lucky. We're unfunded. We've created ourselves. We've got some huge clients. I can't name them, but they're in the top three of the world's largest custodian banks. So they're big. We've got a lot of other interesting customers outside of the banking environment, and we're creating, we're using AI to create the code, as well. So naturally we're vibe coding, but we're using AI embedded as well. And the vast majority, if not all of those, are using private, LLMs. So open source, LLMs. So that's critical because it's not ChatGPT. It's not Anthropic. Yeah. It is, private LLM. So we're spending most of our time using the tools and creating new tools for our clients.
Okay.
A lot of the work we do is teaching, and I think it's one of the wonderful things about this is, you know, if you have a knowledge, get out there and tell everyone about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how would you describe the state of technology right now and what it is you're capturing? Like you said, there's so much changing in AI so fast right now. I feel like it's hard for most folks to keep up. What would you say is the critical thing people should be paying attention to right now, in specifically the vibe coding space? Or
it's difficult. I mean, think of this as it's not just a wave; it's a tsunami that's coming in. And if you're a surfer, you've got to be right at the front of the wave and grabbing that. I was just saying that I keep repeating to people, it's like those, you know, two guys in the woods somewhere, and they see a bear, and one of them starts putting on his trainers, and the other guy goes, you're never going to outrun the bear. And I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to be ahead of you. if you're working in this industry, it is moving so fast. I don't think, you know, there'll only be a dozen people that are staying right on the edge, and that's moving, you know, on a day-to-day basis. You've just got to stay ahead of this, and you've just got to keep up. And literally, if I tell you the very latest technology today, by the time this comes out, even if it's the end of this week, it's going to be out of date. It is just moving that fast. There are tools we are using today that didn't exist last week. There are models we're using today that didn't exist 2 weeks ago.
Right.
It is that fast. It's crazy. We don't have to be at this stage, but I think you've got to find a way of just finding that little tap that gives you enough information that just keeps you up to date, and you've got to maintain that enthusiasm and inquisitiveness just to keep you've got to keep an eye on it. And to keep an eye on it, you've got to be, it's like, to use the analogy, it's like watching the waves. You know, the waves come in, they're relatively random. You're just looking for that right one that you want to surf on, but you've got to keep looking. If you turn away, you're going to miss it.
Right. So in your perspective, this is one of the topics that I see people talking about. Who is vibe coding for? Like, is this for CEOs, for experienced developers, for just idea folks? Like who is the primary audience right now for vibe coding, would you say?
That's a great question. I think it's changing. I know it's changing. I mean, vibe coding was for a few people who wanted to experiment with it. And then, of course, the serious programmers, which I'd like to think I'm one, but I was also one of the more inquisitive ones. The serious guys, ooh, you know, AI will never be as good as me, etc. That's gone. That's past. There's no way you can claim that vibe coding is for the minority. From a coding point of view, I would say as of the last month or two, and we're end of January now as we record this, the last few months, vibe coding is not just a sort of, you know, for a certain bunch. It is the future in the coding side. I have now got, I mean, my head of marketing is more flipping prolific with coding than my engineering team. He is just coming up with ideas and he's producing them and they're going out. We've got people will go into a meeting. We had a meeting last Thursday. We're coding it this week, and we'll be presenting it, you know, the entire application on iPhone and Android. A big application that took, you know, a team multiple months to create. We're doing it in a week. Now, we're not going to go into production with it, but we can demonstrate, rather than doing a slideshow, we can present it as a working, fully functional app. Okay. So I think vibe coding is totally changing the way vibe coding is going to be for everyone. Everyone that's inquisitive, everyone that's got ideas, everyone that's can think of something. Oh, wouldn't that be good on an app? Wouldn't that be on a phone? That would be really useful if I could do this. Right. Just take out the if, and it's just like sit down, do it, and it's you could literally have stuff ready in an hour. It's crazy. I mean, it's changing things and presenting new opportunities.
Right. So would you say the primary goal is to produce totally complete code? Are you seeing companies that are using it to supplement developers or just to make the developers much more productive? Or like what's kind of the sweet spot for how to leverage vibe coding in an organization?
I think it's a little bit of everything at the moment, but again, it's changing. Yeah. I mean, you could ask someone, you know, what language you code in, and you're either a front-end programmer or you're a back-end programmer. Then you get the full-stack programmer. Now, a back-end programmer would never believe the full-stack programmer could ever know anything decent about the back-end stuff. Then you've got DevOps, and then you've got QA. So there's this whole multitude of different capabilities. And so if you're programming or you sit in one of those spaces, I think what the new technologies out and we're playing with Claude bots, which at the time of recording is out by a few days, and it's now just been, it's got to change its name to Moltbot. And it's absolutely incredible, but it's going to change the abilities and where the bottlenecks are. So you're going to see programmers managing. So you've gone from being a programmer to managing a bot that's coding for you. You've got Claude codes, you've got open codes, et cetera, that you're managing. You're just overseeing it now. So it's not just the code we go into now, the creation of the requirements, the PRDs. Then you've got creation of of how do you put it into, how do you fire it up into AWS, GCP, or Azure. So you've got DevOps. You've got QA. We mustn't forget QA. Testing is essential for these things, particularly in the sort of code that's been produced. Everyone can moan about the code, but it's getting better and better and better. Yeah. And it will eventually get to it's almost at the stage now where it is extremely good. So it's sticking a massive stirring thing in the whole enterprise. It's going to totally change things. You're going to find people going to sales, coming up with meetings and ideas, having a sales meeting, and then coming back saying, "Can we meet again in the afternoon?" And they'll vibe code it. is this what you were thinking? And they'll come back in the afternoon and say, "Here's the app. You know, you can keep it for a couple of days. Come back and we'll give you a price for it." It's that fast. It's really that fast.
That's impressive. It's wild what has happened in the industry. But you touched on something that I think is important, which is the QA aspect. Because one of the trends that I've seen over the last decade is a lot of organizations saying, hey, we're agile. That means we don't need QA departments anymore. Developers can test their own code. And those same organizations are now like, okay, we're gonna use vibe coding and we're going to have the agents build the code. But they've lost their entire QA infrastructure. Do you have any advice for those companies on how to roll this out in a safe way?
It changes on the app. Now, if you're producing something for the general public, which is not doesn't hold finance, it doesn't hold your health data, it doesn't, you know, it's like a game, like something that just does a bit of research for you. If it makes a mistake, or if it logs you out, or you get stuck, or and you've got no no office to manage the input, it doesn't matter, not really.
Right.
You vibe code it, you chuck it out. The important thing there is get it out to market as quick as possible. Think of something, chuck it out. I mean, if you sit and wait days, literally days, not weeks, days. If you sit and wait, someone else will do it for you. But if you're putting something out, as we do, into where people are putting payments on it, people's passports, proof of ID, proof of residency, and financial bank accounts are dependent on that, there's no way that's going without QA. Bits of that, yes, will be vibe coded. It's the way it is for the future. But there's no way that is getting out without going through the full QA structure. It has to. Now, some of that QA, even some of the tests, could be vibe coded as well. But again, you have to have humans, and the law in Europe states that certain decisions cannot be made by AI. So we have to have these controls in place. AI is advising people; it is not making decisions. Humans make decisions. AI gives you the information to make that, and again, that can be wrong. It gives you references to make those decisions.
For sure,
and it's up to you to make those to sort of decode those references. But you can send humans off to get find me information about this. They can go off. They can bring you back the wrong material. It does the same thing, but again, a human has to be responsible ultimately. So, if it's consumer based, chuck it out. Okay. You're right. Doesn't need QA. Absolutely right. But if it's industry based, or you have health data behind it, or finance, it's got to be QA'd.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay, cool. So let's say a developer has not really started down this road yet, and they're like, shoot, I really need to get started. What is the number one place you would send them, or the number one technology you would or tool you would suggest they get started with?
Wow. This company I went to see last Thursday, I'm sure it's obscure enough that they won't recognize who they are. They have a small development team, and they're completely against or just not into AI. They didn't think it could do anything. They called us to say, help, we need to get, they're the owner of the company called, said we need to get more out of our data. We have that guy sitting on our Slack in the background, and he's going, wow, oh my God, wow. As one of my guys is sitting there sort of deploying the stuff, and we saw them on Thursday. We're now Tuesday, two working days difference, and their mind is blown. So to answer your question, where do you need to go? The classics to get started are obviously Claude Code, Open Code, if you're working in code, and ChatGPT. Now, if you want to get into this and you're starting from scratch, you've got to spend a bit of money. And I say a bit of money. It's like if you want to watch films and become a film buff, you're going to have to pay for, for Netflix, for Amazon Prime, and a few other bits. We're only talking 20, 30 US dollars or equivalent per month. And you can do it on a one-off subscription. There are some free things, but if you're going to learn it. So get out there, get ChatGPT, understand it a little bit, read a little bit about it. I mean, but you really got to understand what an LLM is. And you've got to understand the basics about why doesn't it answer some questions correctly? Why does it? And you can be inquisitive and sort of read up about how an LLM works and how the ChatGPT works. Doesn't take long, and of course we run these courses with you guys with Entwickler in Germany, US, and UK now, where we're teaching that to coders.
Yeah, you're doing a boot camp on tour, right?
Yeah, we're doing a boot camp on tour, which is we did quite a few last year. It was crazily successful. We had the guys phoning us like 2 days before saying another 12 have just signed up. Can you send someone?
That's amazing.
It was great. I've been teaching Java since the late 90s. I was one of the authors of Learning Tree, and in those days, you could write something. You once it was written, you didn't need to update it for like a year, sometimes 2 years, and a new version would come out. You know, we go from Java 1.3 to 1.5 or 5, it was called then. We'd have J2EE 1.2 went to 1.3. I co-authored some of these earlier books, and you. You know, you could leave it for years, and we got royalties off the back of that, and it was really expensive. I've gone from Munich to Berlin, or from Berlin to London, and we've had two weeks between it. I have to rewrite like a 20-30% of the coursework, and I'm now totally rewriting and trying to keep up to date, because there's so much stuff that we were saying, oh, we'll use this and we'll use this, and here's the technique to do that. Some of that stuff's become irrelevant, not entirely, but we need to reduce the size. But going around teaching these things is fascinating. And we've had 40, 50, 60 people, over 60 in one case, the most recent one, on these courses. And it's fascinating because we've had PhD, people working on their PhDs, people with postgrad, postdoctorate, staff doing research, and we've had people straight out of university, and everyone is brought to the same level, effectively. Mm-hmm. It's been really fascinating. All you need is ideas and enthusiasm. We've had people going off in the evening. You know, I'll head off to the bar, and they've gone off to start coding. they come back the following day, and there's a whole bunch of, look what I did, you know, overnight from what I learned yesterday. It's great. It's really good.
Nice. It feels like a great way to get more utility into the industry, because you're empowering the people that know what it is they want.
It's super, super important for me to, there's no point in being sort of the elite or sitting in the ivory tower and sort of saying everyone else has missed out on AI. I've got to the age where I'm not going to be in the ivory tower for a long time anyway. but I want to be able to impart that enthusiasm and the power that you get by having, it's like teaching someone, you know, how to code in Python or Java, or, you know, how to use a smartphone when they've been on a whatever the unsmart phone, the thick phone is. It's and seeing the smile on their face. So I've literally, you know, from the 60 people, 95 plus percent of those people, like all but, you know, well, hopefully all of them, walk away with this incredible new ability to do a whole bunch of things. I mean, I just look at some of the LinkedIn posts and the things that people have come back with. It's incredible. It's like, wow, I've all of a sudden got this amazing new skills. It's like, you know, what was that? You sort of have skills injected into you. And it's done in the space of 2 days.
So one of the things that I see a lot in my social media feed is I see a lot of very pro AI, pro vibe coding types of things, but I also see a lot of negative things. And what do you think is the answer for how to kind of bridge the gap in the industry, as we see a lot of resistance to this massive change and shift in the industry?
I mean, this is on the sort of social side, philosophical social side, which I admit I'm not very good at. Humans generally follow a Gaussian or normal distribution, and you know, it's the bell-shaped curve, and you have these long tails on either end of the sort of super stupid and the super intelligent. But you also have the left wing, the right wing, the super lazy and the super energetic, and it follows these things. Now, doesn't matter what you do in every way, you're going to get people that abuse it. And unfortunately, the things that we see in the news, because they're newsworthy, newsworthy means that it's unusual. It sits on those little curves. So you're only going to see the extreme left, the extreme right, the the couch potato, the, you know, 300-kilo guy who can't get out of his bed being lifted out by a crane, to the sort of chap who's just run 50 marathons in 50 days. You know, those are newsworthy. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to bring in AI into this, you're going to have all these wonderful utilities for 98%, but there's going to have 2% on either side of that trail that are going to do some stupid things with it. Some of those stupid things might be clever things. I mean, you look at dynamite. It was used for mining, and it got us a lot of stuff. Chinese invented it, but it also ended up being used, you know, for killing people. Nobel created the prize because he wanted to be remembered for good things. And you know, I'm sure there'll be one or two people listening to this that hadn't realized that Nobel invented dynamite.
Probably true.
Yeah. Sad. You need to get out a bit more, I think, read if that's the case. But, you know, I don't. But, you know, there are. Some of the crazy things that people were doing with AI gives you a lot of tooling and it gives you a lot of power. You see people certainly in America walking around with guns. They're powerful things. You can point them at someone, pull the trigger, and it kills them. AI can do some really crazy, amusing things. I love the idea of creating funny photos, but I think the thing that certainly X was criticized for in the UK, and I know in Europe, were for sexually explicit photos. But that's effectively how the internet came about, was from porn. So, you know, some people are going to do it. Some people have different desires from others. There's always going to be that small, little window of crazy people. So I think from a social point of view, you just have to accept that you give people new tools and they're going to find silly things, crazy things to do with it.
Right. And so as technologists, the thing that I've advocated for years is, as technologists, we have an increasingly powerful set of tools to do things, and we have some level of responsibility to do those things responsibly and ethically, but it doesn't mean we don't use the tools and keep moving forward with the industry. And
well, AI is leveling that ground, because AI is just as when I started programming in the 80s, believe it or not, I know I look young, but it was a very, very narrow skill. You could go into a party and say you were a computer programmer. People said, wow, just like being a rocket scientist. But now if you say you're a computer programmer, it's like half the people there are computer programmers and they're all into AI. Yeah. And it's very boring, and they all wander off. It's a great way of being antisocial. It's leveling the playing fields now. Yeah. And I, as I was saying right at the beginning, It's you've now got CEOs, marketing people, people who entrepreneurs who are trying to start up a business, who've never coded, even touched a phone. You will have this year the ability to type an idea into a phone, or even to talk to your phone. Mm-hmm. I can do it today because we're on the leading edge. But you can talk to your phone, give it an idea, and it's going to code it up for you, not on the phone, but. It's leveling the playing field. So it's not technologists that are going to have secret magic ability. It's everyone. Anyone who gets into AI is going to have this ability. So it's totally changing who has this superpower.
Do you worry at all about the state of information security and privacy on the short term? I think on the long term, it'll work itself out as it always does. But in the short term, do you think there's a concern there?
I'd almost disagree with you. I worry about it a lot, and I don't think it will work its way out. It's one of the reasons why when I started the AI company after exiting my previous company, I started specifically around local LLMs, open source LLMs, on device LLMs or in cloud that we own, because of privacy. And I, speaking from the EU, me sadly, from the UK, But I do have an oh no, you're not. You're in America, aren't you? So yeah, you're in one of the evil other places. I forget. I apologize. We're sitting in an area where it's privacy is a little bit more important. I know it's important to everyone in every country as to a certain extent, but we've got a government that has created policies for that. And what we don't want is our private data being disrespected and sent to, and this includes United States, China, anywhere effectively, or even to another country. So I don't know that that's going to get any better, because the prolific use of AI and people just treating it almost as if it's human are going to be... it's going to be quite dangerous, and that's one of the reasons why we specialize in private LLMs.
Right, that makes sense.
Anything sense. You know, we say that we run, that we record, that we do, stays within the walled garden of our clients.
So I feel like you've actually answered my earlier question too, which is, to a lot of the detractors, it's not to just avoid AI, it's to be more careful and conscientious about what AI you use, how you implement it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to type in questions about your personal health or a business you're trying to fire up, I mean, I'm working with some businesses which, you know, we're dealing with the 9-figure numbers for those with a that are calculated in the hundreds of millions and well into the 10 and 11 figure numbers, into the single digit, multi-digit billions, where those and startups and business ideas where stupidly large amounts of money are being exchanged. Now, if I was to take those project documents or documents that I'm working with or advising to into ChatGPT or Anthropic or Claude or, you know, any Mistral, there is nothing in those terms and conditions that stops them from keeping that document and using it for retraining or whatever else they want to do. And if you've got AI, which is that powerful, all you need to do is to sit there with another AI bot that says, if anyone uploads anything interesting, pick the let's feed off the interesting ideas, and of course before you know it, your ideas being fed off to someone else. I'm not suggesting this is happening. I'm suggesting it is more than possible.
Oh yeah,
and extremely likely. So we have policies, in company policies, and policies of my clients as well, where you cannot simply use online bots. Because it's not the AI. Most people should know this, but AI isn't learning at all. AI is fixed from a date that it's usually 6 months to a year before it's released. Mm-hmm. And so its knowledge for the very latest ChatGPT 5.2, its knowledge ends somewhere in 2025, probably in the early part of 2025. Anything it knows since then, it's reading directly off the news and adding it to its knowledge. AI doesn't learn. The only way AI learns is from the people running the AI to capture other people's data from news feeds, from various different places, and feed it into the next generation of iterations. And that is why they are so keen for you to use their chatbots and all their little tools, because what they want is all the text you're typing. Right. When you get the answer back, I'm sure you've seen, you get, you know, here's answer one, here's answer two, which one do you prefer? It's actually getting its preferences from you, the user, as to which is the better answer. So they're using your data, and that is extremely dangerous. People are not realizing this because it's becoming far more human-like. They're not dealing with a database. They feel as if they're dealing with a human. It's very easy. You know, a chatbot can say, and how big is this company? And what's the turnover? And, you know, it's not doing it on purpose, but you're giving it information because it's trying to get information in order to give you the right answer.
Right. To nail that down. That makes, exactly. And it's my opinion is that you kind of need a little bit more. I feel like we missed some basic education about AI for years, even among technologists in some cases, as to what its capabilities are, how it actually functions under the covers. Do you think that that's actually important for people to understand today?
It's so difficult because, again, going back to the analogy with the Java, what is it, 25 years ago now, Java would come out with a new version, let's say 1.3, at the time, we're talking sort of late 90s, early 2000s, or J2EE would come out with a new version. And it was so slow that you had time for, you could read the specs.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the book companies would phone up, or you'd have an email from them because email was new, and they'd say, hey, we want you to write a book, or we want you to participate, or can you write a book on this? And you'd write it, and you'd maybe take 6 months to write it, you'd produce it, and it was the only authoritative source of information if you wanted to do EJBs or JMS or something, because there was nothing else out there. Now, today, somebody comes out with a new model that works in a new way. It's announced on X within minutes. It's on LinkedIn within minutes. Somebody then posts something on LinkedIn within hours. It's on all the different, it's on Medium and various different things within hours. And then normally within 6 to 12 hours, it's on YouTube. And one day later, literally one day after, for example, DeepSeek have just released OCR 2.0, and there's lots of people busy coding away now to create different MLX versions and all sorts of different things for it that I know. It's already out. People, hundreds, thousands of people have downloaded it. It was only released a couple of hours ago. How on earth can you educate people on that side? Going back to the courses that we're running, I literally had, and we were doing, we'd do a 2-day course. On day two, I would spend the first 15 minutes of the day correcting stuff that I did from the day before and update, because things have changed, and updating them on all the new models that were released that previous night.
Wow.
And I'm telling the people that are sitting in the audience, I'm saying, guys, you are so up to date now. You are there's 60 people here. You are in the top 100 on this planet, that are most up to date. Now, that won't last for very long. By this afternoon, there'll be another, 2,000 people. But I just don't think you can. You've got to watch X, and I'm not a fan of, of X, given the ownership, et cetera. I'll be honest about that. But I'm on it because that's where the information comes out. LinkedIn comes out there. Unfortunately, you've got to follow these, and YouTube is a goldmine of information.
Yeah.
But so, you've got to be there. And that's the only real way to educate. And going back to your question, I don't think you can formally educate this, because by the time it's got into the education system, and I think schools or universities are going to need to bring in guest speakers to talk about it, because it's changing. It's crazy.
Yeah, too fast. Yeah. So in light of that, I'm going to ask the hardest possible question. Mm-hmm. What's next? Like, what is the future hold for AI development?
I think it's exciting, as I'm an optimist. I think it's hugely exciting. It's definitely going to change. Making clothes didn't change when they bought in the steam engine and the mills. We still made clothes. We were just, different people made different things. Right. It created different industries from the Industrial Revolution. Robots were introduced to cars. They produce more cars, sadly. I'm stating the obvious here. Things are going to change. It's exciting to watch. I think, you have bottlenecks. In the past, we were always criticized, or certainly me as a CTO, was always criticized that we were never fast enough. Somebody had a new business, the sales guys went out, we had new ideas. We'd know it would take 9 months. We knew if we said 9 months, they would say it's too long. Yep. So we'd say 6 to 9 months. And then we get to knowing that it would take 9 months. But by the time that we get to 6 months, the 3 months wouldn't seem that much longer. So we've just been realistic. And coding was always the bottleneck. And then you had to write it through QA and things. Now, today, those bottlenecks are back to, can we have enough ideas? Because now coding is just chucking out stuff, you know, like, oh, there's another idea. There's your idea. Code it up. It's now moving it down to, so we need more ideas on the input. So requirements is becoming a bottleneck now. PRDs, how do we get the requirements in? Because you can't code these things. QA is becoming, I think, if you're working in certainly my industry, QA is becoming a bottleneck. And then sales is the next thing. How do you get the stuff out, you know, on the other side? How will it change? I know for a fact it will change, and it will change very significantly. And it's fascinating to watch. And I would just state the same warning again for people. It's not AI that's going to put people out of work. It's people with AI are going to put people without AI out of work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you have any ideas or anything at all, get into AI. Just research it. Just look at it. Read it. But this is the industrial revolution in the IT sense, happening very fast.
So if I take a moment to look backwards throughout. Literally, as long as we've had computers, we've had this vision of creating systems that that made it easier to write code, that made it easier to tell the computers what to do. Do you think that we've finally achieved that goal?
It's getting close. It really is getting close. I mean, you look at some of the 2000s. Oh, yeah. Computer, you look at some of the Star Trek stuff, you know, from the 70s, and they were all talking to computers, and you know, it's that was considered the ultimate thing, to be able to talk to a computer, for the computer to be able to see what's going on. That's reality today. We've got these phones that we, you know, sit and use all day. For some 6 or 7 years now, they've had the ultimate screen. You can't get a better screen. It has faster refresh rate than your eyes can see. It has a finer pixels than your eyes can see. And it's so flipping bright. You know, if you turn it on at the wrong time of day, it half blinds you. The sound is beyond what you need. You've got the full stereo, even surround sound, Dolby Atmos surround, these things. So we've reached the absolute top on these sort of things, and they sit and work, you know, in a very small thing. Now, as we start to get AI, and you know, you've got superb cameras that outdo my, you know, super expensive mirrorless SLRs. Mm-hmm. That's the hardware that's reached the end. The AI is now catching up with this hardware, and it's getting to the stage where the AI will read and see in full resolution what's going on at an incredible rate. It will hear everything. Everything we do can now be recorded and analyzed. And we've got bots that, as we're talking, will put up ideas, and you can click on them and move them around. So it's definitely close. And I think once AI gets full vision capability, it will learn much faster, because at the moment we run out of text. Hence, right, People grappling around looking for sources of text. We run out of text. But if we can start feeding them videos, the AI will start to learn from videos. You have to tell it there's a thing called gravity. You can give it the formula for gravity, but you tell it that when you drop something, it goes down, and you can give it the acceleration. But when AI can actually see someone doing that with their hand, and the object that's in the hand falls out, it will start to, just as a human does, as a baby does, start to get some of these ideas about, you know, how things are happening. It's going to change even quicker than we see today.
Sure. So what would you say is the number one takeaway you want for our audience, especially the developers?
It's definitely not too late to, I mean, I again, seeing many, many technologies, watching from, you know, Java, we went from Ant to Maven to Gradle, and then out came Scala and Kotlin and people get, you know, some people got out early and they got into Scala. Scala was all the rage, and then you had Hacker and somebody who had missed that wave thought, okay, there are Scala programmers. I'm not going to get into Scala now because there are programmers who know it better than I do. And I'm already at the top of my game in Java. So why would I get into Scala and be at the bottom or trying to learn? And but with this AI world, it is definitely not too late. While there are hundreds of millions of people using this, there are only thousands who actually understand how it works. Yeah. And who really understand how it works. So this is, it is definitely not too late. Now is, I mean, you can go from zero, literally from a complete AI phobe person to mastering it in a couple of months. It is, and be using it in obviously in hours, minutes, hours, days, but to mastering it in a couple of months. And now is not too late. It is, and that's not just a program, it's just to anyone. Let your curiosity, you know, roam and get out there. There's a huge, you know, picking out there to benefit from this. So don't sit back, get out there, look at it, look at what's there. If you're just going to be sending messages off to ChatGPT and Anthropic, Claude, and trying to create a business out of that, you might as well give up, because it's like trying to create a unique web page. You know, there's billions of web pages out there. You're not going to do it. You know, the $1 million web page, if you remember that, where they sold every pixel on 1,000 by 1,000, which I thought was genius.
Right.
That's been done. It's done. But get into the local models. Look at some of the new stuff that's coming out. But look at the very latest stuff. Don't look at stuff that don't read the news and see what the trends are. Find those. Because they've already gone. Find those people on X, on LinkedIn. Go to these workshops and just get back onto the tip of that wave and go for it.
Great. I think that's a fantastic message. Thank you, John. Where can folks reach out or follow you online?
I'm not super prolific on online. I do have a Twitter account, which is JT Davies, as you Americans like to pronounce it, Davies. JT Davies, as we pronounce it. That's on X. Did I say Twitter? On X, you know what I mean. I'm on LinkedIn. I do post quite regularly. I was lucky enough a couple of months ago to post something that went viral, and all of a sudden I seem to have this ability now of posting a comment and I get like 50,000 links on it, which is quite weird.
Congratulations. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you know what it did? We had to write an AI bot that we stuck inside to Chrome to be able to handle the responses from the replies. Because it was like 700 comments in the space of 2 days over the weekend. The only way I could handle it, because it kept resetting, was to write a little plugin, which again, I've never done. My colleague, launched it, and neither of us had written a plugin before, and we did it in 15 minutes.
Nice.
So, you know, that just shows you, you know, what you can do when the need's there. But so on LinkedIn, and obviously the EntVicler courses that we'll be running and talking as well.
John, thank you so much for the conversation. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thanks for being here.
You're most welcome. Enjoyed it. Thanks.